Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo. Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español. Marca Nacho Monreal. Pim pam pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning to you too. How are you doing? You all right?
I'm all right. How's your weekend? How's things going up in Edinburgh?
It was great. I'm back now. I'm back in London. Back yesterday. I was there for a week. It was good. It was like, I mean, I wasn't performing, so it was kind of weird. I felt like... You know, Arsenal in bygone transfer windows, kind of watching everyone else have fun, but not really being that involved myself. But it was great. And do you know what?
What?
I mean, I feel like this has become like weathercast, but it was so cool up there.
Whoa,
it rained.
What's that noise?
It was cold. I could wear a jacket. I was embracing that element of it.
Right. Did you just hear that noise? What was that noise? Did you hear it?
I've got a motorbike in the room with me. Was it that sort of thing?
It was kind of like a low droning swooping thing. I thought it might be like a spaceship or something, but no,
maybe,
clearly not.
The problem is I've got headphones in. So what if it is a spaceship and I just haven't heard it? Is that a real risk here?
It is. It could be hovering over London like in V. Remember all the spaceships just hovered over the cities? And then the lovely people came down. They said, hey, we're great. We're good aliens. Don't worry about it. And then they started eating rats and babies and stuff. Fucking aliens. You just can't trust an alien, can you?
No. And I bet at first they were just eating the rats and everyone was like, this is great. They're clearing up a pest. And then they came for the babies. Mm. And it was like, oh, it could have been so good. You know what I mean?
They just went and they couldn't do without eating babies.
I know. If only they'd been more discerning in their culinary choices, then us and the aliens could have got along.
Yeah.
Have you seen any aliens in Dublin at the weekend?
No. We've had a surprisingly alien-free weekend here in Dublin. Oh. It's bank holiday weekend, and it is quite nice. Still warm. We haven't had the cool and the rain like you had up in Edinburgh. So, it's all been okay. I didn't see our final warm-up game of preseason against Lazio on Saturday night.
Actually, despite being at the Edinburgh Festival, did watch it.
Right.
I think I missed about 15 minutes in the second half. But it wasn't particularly thrilling. Let's put it like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true of most of our preseason games. They haven't been particularly thrilling. Interesting to see him, or to hear about him, certainly, because I didn't see it, start with a 4-4-2 and then expand on why he changed that. I think we spoke about this last week, didn't we, or the other week, where it's really refreshing to hear him talk about things from a tactical viewpoint. What did you make of the attempt at a 4-4-2? I mean, it was, I think, was it Lacazette and Eddie Nketiah starting?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I suppose he's got his reasons for selecting the personnel he selects, but I couldn't help but think if he was going to try a 4-4-2, you kind of wanted to see Lacazette and Aubameyang together, you know, because that is the partnership that we're all crying out for. So I suppose it wasn't the fairest test of that system. He had Xhaka and Torreira as his pair of holding midfielders behind that. And, you know, there's a certain amount of balance there. You could see a logic to it. But he has tried other systems in pre-season, and it's been interesting to see that. You know, he's used 4-4-2, he's used 3 at the back. But invariably, he does come back to some kind of 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 variant. Mm. And it feels like that is going to be his preference going into the new season.
What do you make of that kind of tactical fiddling, if you like, in preseason? You know, What has it done for him? What will it have served him to have tried a 4-4-2, to have tried three at the back? Is it just to get it in the minds of the players that they might need to be tactically flexible in certain games? But if his preferred formation is this 4-2-3-1, whatever it is, you know, would he not have been better off drilling them completely with that system? What do you think?
I guess so. I mean, one thing I do wonder is he a manager who likes to change system at times within games if something's not working? You know, with Arsene Wenger, a lot of the time it was a question of, well, I'm going to bring on more attackers, but I'm sort of going to keep them vaguely in the same shape that they're already in. Just put a striker in right wing, striker in left wing. But maybe he's thinking, you know, down the line, if I'm chasing a goal, I would like to go to two central strikers. That's something we've been crying out for Arsenal to be able to do as an option within games. And I wonder if that's part of the process, to be like, look, there'll be plenty of time for them to bed in this 4-2-3-1, but I want to be able to switch to a system that I know works and see how these players cope with that. So I think it has to be regarded as a positive thing. And, you know, maybe if it had been a glorious success in the first half against Lazio, maybe he would be contemplating using it in the Premier League, but it wasn't particularly.
Right.
And I suppose that shouldn't be a great surprise, should it, when you're only playing it for 45 minutes and you haven't done it for about 10 years.
Yeah, he talked about the need for more control in the centre of midfield as one of the reasons why he went with a three-man midfield in the second half. I think he brought on Guendouzi to add an extra body into that midfield. But what were your impressions of Torreira and Xhaka together, and certainly Torreira in terms of what he might bring to the team? Again, with the caveat, it is preseason, we know, but just watching him play, what were your thoughts?
I mean, not only is it preseason, it's his first game back in preseason, so you know it's difficult to draw too many definite judgments. But I mean, he looked very much like the player that I thought we were getting when I saw him play for Uruguay. He's defensively switched on. He's tidy in possession. His ability to drop in and support the centre backs and the full backs is quite interesting. You know, he's happy where required to move into wide areas to intercept. Or another thing that you notice about him actually is that he is pretty handy in the air, a bit like Francis Coquelin, who wasn't the tallest player, but won a pretty good percentage of his headers, of his aerial duels. And Torreira does that too. He's very good at using his body. He's quite stocky despite not being that big, and even if he doesn't win the ball, he kind of is enough of a nuisance to prevent the opposition doing anything useful with it. So I thought he had a decent enough debut. It'll be interesting to see how comfortable Emery feels using some of these players who are back recently at the start of the season, you know, when he feels they're ready to come into the Premier League. He did speak about that, didn't he? He said that it might be short for the first game, I think.
Yeah, we had a few questions, just to go into the questions part before, because this is relevant. Kin Fai on Twitter, who's at Aeroberg, says, yesterday, Stones, Walker, Fernandinho and Aguero all started for City. We don't even have Danny Welbeck back in training yet, and John Stones and Kyle Walker, who played throughout the World Cup, are already back and in the Manchester City team. Now, it's not to say that Danny Welbeck is a player of crucial importance to us, but if we're going into this opening game of the season, you know, it feels to me like if Man City are prepared to play guys who played in the World Cup, then we also should be prepared to do that. I think if you're playing somebody like Bournemouth, with all due respect to Bournemouth, you might be able to take a more sensible approach and say, okay, it would be better for us to be able to give these guys a little bit more rest and a little bit more preseason training and preparation and everything else. That would be better. But the circumstances of our season opening, playing Manchester City and then playing Chelsea, kind of dictate that we're going to have to say, okay, it's not ideal, but it's maybe not the end of the world to play these guys in these games. Well, you know, that's, to me, it would be a risk rather not to play what is perceived, or what he perceives to be, our best 11 against a team as good as Manchester City.
Certainly it would be frustrating, wouldn't it, if we lost to Manchester City next weekend and they had Walker in their team, they had Stones in their team, and we didn't have Xhaka and Torreira in ours. That would be kind of a difficult thing to accept. So I would like to see those players come in if they're ready. But then presumably this decision is not being made by Unai Emery. Presumably it's being made by somebody like Darren Burgess. Presumably that his role in player fitness and player performance is significant enough that he's strongly advising the manager on what to do. And, you know, I think we have to, if we brought in these people who are absolutely experts in their field with glowing reputations, to a certain extent, we have to trust that expertise.
Yeah, maybe so. But I mean, I don't think somebody like Darren Burgess should be able to tell Unai Emery who he can and can't pick. I think what he can do is provide him with information about the player's readiness, about their fitness, about their whatever, their physical capability. Can he do a full 90? Can you maybe just do him for 60 minutes? Would it be better to bring him on in the second half if you need to bring him on? But, you know, at the same time, if City are able to play these guys who are away at the World Cup, why can't we? What's different about our preparation? And, you know, I know there's a million people listening to this right now just getting out the syringe emoji, but I don't think that's it. You know, these are professional guys. They're not gone on summer holidays where they're eating, you know, fish and chips all day and drinking pints and coming back to sweat off the extra pounds that they put on.
No, and the guys who've been at the World Cup, I mean, they've barely had the time to do that. They've only been away for a couple of weeks. Just a matter of weeks ago, they were playing in the highest level of competition. So, I mean, central midfield is the one area as well, isn't it? You know, where we are light. You know, the centre-halves, well, apart from Koscielny, they're all there. Aubameyang and Lacazette at the other end of the pitch, they're available. It's in the middle of the park because Xhaka and Torreira are potentially such important players for us this season, where there is a selection issue there. Maybe Emery will, I nearly said Arsene Wenger. God, I'll probably do that this season. But maybe Emery will decide he can risk one, but not both.
Right.
That feels plausible to me.
I guess we'll see which one he considers most ready or most important. And if he can, you know, if he feels like he's got enough depth in his midfield to cope without one of them, it depends perhaps on the fitness of Aaron Ramsey as to what happens there in the opening game. But we might have a question about the opening game a bit later on. But anything else stood out for you from the 2-0 win over Lazio? I did see some people suggest that defensively we weren't necessarily as convincing as you might like.
No, and I have to say, personally, there were a few moments where I felt maybe some of the shortcomings of our new goalkeeper were evident. He had a good game in some respects. I think what we're seeing with him is he's much more comfortable in possession of the ball at his feet than Petr Cech.
Right.
And I think actually our first goal came as a consequence of a move that he had been involved in. You know, he'd been knocking the ball around with the defenders. But there were times where the ball came into the box and there was a palpable sense of panic between him and the centre-halves. And he wasn't quite as commanding and composed coming off his line as you would want. So that's a bit of a concern. I mean, look, that's another big decision, isn't it? Facing Emery, he's played his cards very, very close to his chest, and we've got something riding on it as well, haven't we? I can't remember what the bet was.
Yeah. I can't remember either. No. Someone tell us on Twitter, please, because you remember these things better than we do.
We have to punch ourselves in the face or something like that.
I think I get to punch you. I think there could have been ham on ruffles involved somewhere along the way.
That's true. And I saw you had some ham on ruffles on Instagram.
I did have ham on ruffles this weekend. My daughter's home from Barcelona and she brought a couple of bags of ham on ruffles. So one has been mostly consumed. The other is sort of waiting there for that moment where you just can't wait any longer. You know, like you know that you have them, but you don't want to eat them because then you won't have them anymore. But at some point, the desire for their deliciousness overcomes your desire to not have ham on ruffles, if that makes sense.
I completely understand. It's a matter of time, really, until they disappear.
It is going to be an interesting one, Cech versus Leno. I don't know quite what he's going to do. My suspicion always was the new signing was going to play, but again, I wonder if the quality of the opposition, if the caliber of the opposition in our opening games might have an impact on that, particularly if he wants to provide some calm, some experience behind a new central defensive partnership, for example. That might be part of his thinking when it comes to his goalkeeper. It's all kind of joined up, isn't it? If I do this, can I offset it with that? If I play this guy, you know, it is an interesting part of what's going to come this season.
It's not an easy introduction to English football, is it, for any new signing to face Man City and then Chelsea? And I wonder as well, will some of his decisions be informed by the fact that he almost certainly is going to have a very inexperienced, well, relatively inexperienced player at left back as well, part of his defence?
Yeah, of course, we have an injury to Sead Kolasinac, who will be out for about 2 months. 8 weeks to 10 days, they said, or 10 weeks, rather, they said on Arsenal.com. So, you know, we're talking about, what, September, October, mid-October, maybe, before he gets back. So we're well into our Europa League campaign at that stage as well. Nacho Monreal has returned from the World Cup with a bit of a knee problem. Nothing too serious, they say, but it might leave him short for the game against Man City. And if we're talking about playing Xhaka, maybe playing Torreira, at least they got some minutes at the weekend. Monreal hasn't had any minutes in preseason at all. So even without an injury, you know, it would be difficult to throw him in first game. So it looks like we'll be facing Manchester City with Ainsley Maitland-Niles at left back.
It does look that way, doesn't it? I mean, I have to say, I quite like Maitland-Niles at left back. I think that you know, it's not his natural position, maybe, or not his future position, but I think he's got the attributes to be pretty handy there. And he had a good couple of games there last season where he was keeping Kolasinac out of the side. So it's bad news. There's no two ways about it. But I think this could be a good opportunity for him, and I have a lot of faith in him.
Yeah, you reckon it'll be okay? I mean, I liked what he did there last season as well, but it was a guy being played out of position, and that's always a concern to me. So, you know, I don't doubt his commitment or his ability to do the job, really, but I just wonder if it's something we really have to think about in the longer term is what we're going to do at left back. I did see your tweet to say that you felt a bit more comfortable with Maitland-Niles at left back than Kolasinac. And, you know, again, sort of delving into the questions here, this one was from Gary Gallagher, who is at Asking Too Few, and he says, could Kolasinac play as a left-sided attacker in a 4-2-3-1? I don't think he can, but it just illustrates to me that people aren't convinced by him as a left back yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of question we occasionally used to get about Andre Santos. You know, let's play him on the wing, not a fullback, to hide his deficiencies. Kolasinac is a player that I want to like, and I see why he's a bit of a cult figure, and, you know, he's got this huge frame and he can be so effective going forward, but I just feel like defensively, I just don't think he looks comfortable as a fullback, particularly in a 4-4-2. I think in a wing back, he can kind of get away with it. And he's got that left-sided centre-half, someone like Monreal, who's able to sweep up in behind him and cover him. I think if you were a winger and you were up against Kolasinac, yes, he's big and that's kind of intimidating, but I think you'd fancy your chances of getting round him, of knocking the ball past him, if you're agile and you're quick. Mm. I think he can be vulnerable. And Maitland-Niles, yes, he's out of position, but athletically, I think he's sort of more suited in some ways to fullback than Kolasinac is. And Kolasinac can look like a centre-half playing at left-back, I think, physically, in terms of his body type. Mm. Whereas Maitland-Niles, I remember he played against Salah last season and, you know, it was a difficult ask for him, but he had the speed to cope with him. And when he cut inside onto his left foot, that kind of suited Maitland-Niles, he's right-sided. And he'll be up against Riyad Mahrez, maybe, for Man City from that side. So,
yeah.
That might be a similar sort of duel. Like, Kolasinac is one who's got a big, big season ahead because his first season started promisingly, really kind of faded and ultimately disappointed. He's now started this season, which he had an opportunity to start the season as first choice left back with Monreal coming back late. He's now missed that. Yeah, you do wonder, you know, what the future holds for him a little bit.
Yeah. It's a blow for him, certainly. But yeah, I, you know, like you, I'm a bit unconvinced. But who knows? Players' career trajectories are not always you know, linear. They can go up and down. But I think you're right. He did have a real opportunity, and he was being played in preseason, and Emery was playing him for 90 minutes in most of the games. Whether that was just because he had no choice, no other option, or because he really wanted to give him minutes to get him match fit and get him physically ready for the Premier League, we'll never know now, I guess. But just based on what you've seen from preseason, what's your gut feeling about our readiness for the start of the season? Because I think on the one hand, it's a brand new season. That's always exciting. It's a new manager. It's new coaches. There are some new players. All those things are exciting, and I'm enthused about all of them. But I'm just curious as to what your gut feeling. I mean, do you have any greater insight into what Unai Emery is going to do? Or is it going to take 3 months, 6 months of watching him work before we can really assess how he's trying to do what it is that he needs to do with Arsenal?
I think the latter is true. I mean, it's not like I'm watching these preseason games and seeing a completely transformed team from the one I saw last season. It's not unrecognizable.
Yeah.
And even the things that Emery has talked about wanting to implement, I mean, I'm thinking primarily of the pressing strategy. That is not at the level yet where you're like, oh, I can see how that's going to be implemented. And that's partly due to personnel not being there, but also due to kind of tactical tinkering between friendly matches, as we said earlier on.
Yeah.
So I think it is going to take more time. So in terms of, are we ready? No, we're not ready, because it's a summer of enormous change, and we're not coming into it with a clear, coherent idea of how we're going to play and what that's going to look like. But, you know, it is becoming increasingly clear that there was a benefit to Arsenal doing the majority of their incoming transfer business so early. That is one thing that we have got going for us. This group of players does appear to be united and bonded and feeling positive. That's a nice thing to observe. But I just think in terms of the minutiae, the tactical minutiae that Emery's so obsessive about, I don't think that's where he would ideally want it on the eve of a season.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit worried, you know, because there has been so much change and players are back late and we have a very difficult start to the season. You know, I think we really do need to give this guy some time and have some patience. You know, we all want the best, and, you know, I guess still in the back of people's minds, perhaps, is this idea that just because Arsene Wenger is gone, all the problems that we had are going to be fixed, or we're going to be immediately better because he's gone. I don't think that's the case. It is going to take Emery time. I don't really know quite what he is trying to do with the team, with some of the decision making that's happening. We're going to talk a little bit about Callum Chambers now in a second, because that's a confusing one for me. You know, I'm a little bit concerned. Just, you know, it is a tough start. Man City are a great team, and I haven't seen perhaps enough attention paid to some of the problems that we had last season, but they may well be solved with different personnel, you know, with Torreira coming in to do a different kind of a job in midfield from other people. And he still has decisions to make, of course, about who is going to make up his midfield, who's going to start up front, who's going to start on the left. If it's Aubameyang starting up front, who's going to start in goal? So I think it will all play out over the course of the next few weeks and months. But you talked about the benefit of doing transfer business early, and that's good. I don't think anybody has any real complaints about the players that we brought in, really. Even if we are to be convinced by a couple of them, you know, the fact that we did the business early is a positive. There's no doubt about that that's a positive. Maybe we haven't done as much business as people might like. There's a gap perhaps in the squad for a wide player. But we come to the business of getting rid of people, selling people, moving players on who are surplus to requirements, who bloat the squad, both in terms of, you know, their wages, just their very presence. You know, we're talking Carl Jenkinson, Joel Campbell, Lucas Perez, it seems, is somebody who Unai Emery wants to move on. He doesn't particularly want to move on anywhere where he's going to have to take a 50% pay cut, which is understandable. You can understand that on any basic level. Why would anyone go and take a huge pay cut when they could just stay? And you can dress it up with the idea that you're going to stay and fight for your place. You know, there's the Ramsey situation. There's the Welbeck situation. you know, this other part of the transfer business doesn't seem to have been managed quite as well.
No, and it's going to be a busy few days, isn't it, in that respect? Yeah. I mean, there are people we have to get out. Admittedly, they only have to leave before Thursday if they are moving to an English club. We can still sell abroad after that point. But I feel like once we go past that point, it might be a little bit harder to extract money from people because they'll know our selling options are limited.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're a foreign club and you're waiting and you think, well, if it gets past the English deadline and, you know, Lucas Perez is still in London and they still want to get rid of him, we're not going to have to pay more money after that point. We'll be able to probably get him for less. So that will be an interesting sort of brinkmanship element to things, I suppose, in the next few days.
Mm. So
the Callum Chambers thing, by the way, I find that really quite odd.
Yeah, the story is that he's about to join Fulham on a season-long loan, right?
Yeah.
So here's Unai Emery talking on July the 3rd. July the 3rd. Not just a random day either. This is when Callum Chambers signed a brand new contract with Arsenal, having previously just signed a new deal last October. So Unai Emery says, I'm delighted Callum has extended his stay with us. He played an important role last season and will be part of my plans this season. Callum Chambers at the time says, delighted to have signed a new deal at Arsenal. I want to give my very best to this great club. Thanks to the manager for showing faith in me, and I'm looking forward to a big season ahead. So what's happened between July the 3rd and August the 6th that has made Unai Emery decide to sanction, because we have to assume he gives his okay for this. What's happened to make this kind of a turnaround, this kind of a change? One minute you give a guy a new deal and say he's part of my plans, and less than a month later, he's not, and he's going to Fulham on loan. What's going on? Do you think it could be to do with making space for a replacement?
I wonder. I do wonder about that. I mean, what's happened since is four friendly games. Now, Chambers hasn't played particularly poorly in those games, from what I've seen. In fact, plenty of people out there have been saying, you know, he's been our best defender in preseason.
Mm.
Maybe it's more the case that the unconvincing performances of Socrates and Mustafi have led Arsenal to think maybe we haven't got the required personnel at centre-half and someone's got to come in. Even so, I am surprised that it would be Chambers who moves out.
Yeah.
You know, when you think of the fact that this would be his second loan spell, Rob Holding's never had a loan spell since joining Arsenal. When you think of the fact that Mavropanos hasn't even been hugely involved in preseason. I think of the five centre-halves, he's played the least football.
Yeah.
It is curious. And maybe part of it is the player's insistence that he wants to play first-team football at this stage. Maybe he's realised, well, look, it looks like I'm not first choice here. I want to play. And that's a factor in it.
Maybe.
I don't know if I buy that personally.
No.
It feels like Chambers would want to stay at Arsenal because there's a real chance that he could earn a first-team place this season.
Yeah. Yeah, I find it very strange. It does make me wonder if there is something else going on, you know, like the potential to bring in a player who they rate more highly than Callum Chambers. In which case, you know, fine. But, you know, if you rate him highly enough to give him a new deal in July, just months after giving him a new deal back in October, who's making these decisions? Could it possibly have been Unai Emery's decision to give Callum Chambers a new contract?
I would say I'd be surprised.
Me too, because why, after just a couple of weeks at the club, would he insist on giving a new deal to a guy who only signed a new deal, you know, back in October? You know,
my
if a guy only has...
manager.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So somebody else is making that decision. Somebody else has made that decision. So has somebody else made the decision to loan him? Who is it? Who's got their fingers in the head coach's pie, if you like? Because, you know, as much as we look at this structure and go, okay, there's a head coach, and then there's an executive committee who make, you know, who do the football business deals with transfers and with contracts and whatever. But if somebody is overruling the manager or the head coach in terms of the players that he has available to him, then I'm not sure that's a healthy thing.
Well, maybe. I mean, maybe there is a financial element. I mean, Fulham have got a lot of money. Maybe they've said,
well, but it's a loan.
Cover his wages and give you $2 million for the loan. Yeah, and they were like, well.
But do we really need money that much? Surely we need centre halves more than we need money.
Yeah. I mean, I really am finding it hard to make sense of. I mean, the only thing I can think is the balance of the centre half wrong. We spoke briefly last week about holding, Mustafi and Socrates both being right-sided centre halves.
Yeah.
Chambers is another one of those. You know, Holding and Mavropanos can sort of play on the left-hand side. Yeah, maybe they think we're a bit heavy on one side. It is really difficult to discern the thinking here. And a lot of it depends on if someone comes in between now and Thursday, if it's one in, one out, or because there's rumours about Vida, aren't there? Have you seen those?
Yeah, the Croatian guy, yeah.
From who's playing in Turkey, I think, at the moment.
Mm.
But I can only assume that. I was absolutely convinced that we were going to see kind of Mustafi and Socrates first choice, Holding and Chambers back up. And it was Mavropanos, if anything, who I thought might go out on loan.
Mm. Yeah, I thought that too. But it is a bit of a weird one. We'll have to wait and see what happens between now and Thursday evening when the window closes. And if we get some information from Unai Emery as to why this deal happened. There is going to be a pre-game press conference, of course, ahead of the Manchester City game. So if that happens, you would like to think someone will ask him what the thinking is behind this. He seems willing enough to expand on the decisions that he makes on the pitch. So maybe he'll be just as open when it comes to the ones off the pitch, assuming, of course, that he is the guy who made that decision. Just a couple of other quick things. Alex Iwobi signed a new long-term contract.
Yeah.
I would have said, that would be an assurance that he's going to be in the team, but by Thursday he could be on loan somewhere else for all we know. But just generally, what did you make of that? Good decision or not?
I think it is a good decision. And I guess, you know, whatever you think of sending Callum Chambers on loan, I think giving him a new contract is also a good decision. You know, it protects his value. It means that, you know, we're not going to risk losing him for less than he's worth, which is the case with a couple of other players.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think it makes sense. I actually think Iwobi has looked pretty decent in preseason too. He looks absolutely massive. I don't know if he's just maturing.
No, it's not just you, because when he came on in Dublin the other night, I was kept a close eye on him, and physically he looked different than he has done in the past. He really did. He looked, I don't know, he just looked a bit taller and a bit wider, and I don't know what it was, but you could see it. It was obvious from the stands in Dublin that physically he has changed somewhat, or maybe it's just him versus some of the other players we had on the pitch that made him look that much bigger. But it caught my eye, that's for sure.
Yeah, it does catch the eye, and I suppose with close control, you know, allied to that physical power, that's going to help him. I do think there is a really, really good player in there, and I'll accept that he hasn't been consistent enough, you know, but that is young players for you. And I think, like a lot of people at Arsenal, he kind of hit a bit of a ceiling, but I am optimistic that he can push past that. And in a squad that's not blessed with many wide players, he's the closest thing we have in some ways.
Do you feel like there's an opportunity perhaps for him to establish himself on the left-hand side, where we do seem to have room for somebody, depending of course on the formation that we pick? But I worry a little bit about the wide areas, because I was watching in Dublin the other night, the Chelsea game, and ostensibly it was Ozil and Mkhitaryan who are both granted a certain amount of freedom, and Ozil in particular is given as much freedom as he likes. They don't really maintain their positions. They both like to come inside and affect the play, which leaves us with gaps. Certainly it was something that Hector Bellerin had to cope with. He didn't play very well against Chelsea, but he was left exposed completely time and time again. Whereas it feels like if we had somebody like Iwobi, at least he would provide that kind of structure, that he wouldn't necessarily drift as central as the other two.
That's true. And actually, one of the most promising aspects of the friendly game against Lazio was the partnership between Iwobi and Maitland-Niles. That was actually our best attacking outlet. Maitland-Niles made a lot of runs on the overlap, and Iwobi sort of tucking inside and playing him through was quite effective. So, look, there's a big decision to be made, isn't there, about Aubameyang and Lacazette if both start, and if Manchester City's the right opponent for them to both start against. If they don't, I think Iwobi's got a really good chance to, as you say, play in from that left-hand side.
Mm. One young player who scored, actually, the other night and has been involved throughout pre-season is Reece Nelson. Mm-hmm. Are you worried that he has yet to sign a new contract?
Yeah, I am. I mean, is it his last season of his existing deal?
Yeah.
It feels kind of crazy, doesn't it, to have such a promising young player in such a vulnerable position. And you almost feel like at that point, his development kind of becomes counterintuitive. You know, the more that you play him, the more you raise his profile, the harder it is to keep him, the more likely it is you lose him. It's a curious thing. Like, why invest playing time in someone who you're not necessarily sure you're going to reap the benefit of that? It's a big issue and one that needs to be answered, doesn't it? Because it's exactly that. You know, why should Arsenal give game time to a player who has no long-term interest in remaining at the club?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's perhaps a way of convincing him.
Of course, that's the difficulty.
That's the difficulty, yeah. But I think, with the Ramsey situation, with the Welbeck situation, with the Reece Nelson situation, there is room for improvement as to how we manage contracts and how we allow players to reach this point where the club's bargaining position is just completely weak because they just don't have one. You know, it doesn't make any difference perhaps with someone like Danny Welbeck if you're not convinced that Danny Welbeck is the guy for the future, but maybe Danny Welbeck should have been sold before now. If we're not giving Danny Welbeck a new deal, then he should have been sold before the end of this transfer window, which we can still do, of course, before the end of April, but do we leave ourselves short, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this is why I'm coming back to the incoming part of our transfer dealing was well managed this summer and the people involved deserve credit for it. The other side of it, I think, has been, if not mismanaged, it's been left too late, or maybe we're just not very good at that side of it. People have pointed to other clubs and the amount of money that they get for players that are deemed surplus to requirements at their club. You know, not just small clubs, you know, at Tottenham, at Chelsea, at Liverpool, you know, they can move players on who they don't want anymore, and they seem to get pretty good money for it. Whereas we are accepting 5 million for Lucas Perez, 5 million euros, a player we spent 17.5 million pounds on 2 summers ago. We're desperately accepting 5 million pounds or 5 million euros for him, but we still can't sell him because of the wages issue. So why is it other clubs can deal with those things and we can't?
I don't know, because we've brought in people specifically to deal with those matters. You know, that's why you have somebody like a head of football relations to, I mean, you hope, don't you, that what's going on in the boardroom in terms of a big potential departure there, you hope certainly that that's not having any kind of impeding effect on our transfer business. Mm. It's difficult to speak with any certainty one way or the other because it's difficult to know how much authority people act with.
Yeah.
But one of the consequences of the advanced transfer deadline is that Arsenal will name their 25-man squad for the Premier League season presumably before the season kicks off, you know, once that deadline closes. So there will, barring a fire sale between now and Thursday, potentially be a number of senior players who aren't on that list. And at that stage, they become effectively worthless. You know, no one's going to pay any big money for those guys when it's clear that we can't even select them.
Can we do, is it just a Premier League transfer window or is it across all English clubs?
Oh, that's a good question. I think they can loan. I think they can loan players from the Premier League in the lower leagues, but I'm not sure they can buy permanently.
Right.
I think that's right.
Let's see. I think we should look this up actually, because that's important. Because there are certain players, for example, who
may go on loan.
Yeah. Well, not may go on loan, but won't have a Premier League suitor. You know, I'm thinking of someone like Carl Jenkinson for it, you know, he could go to a championship club pretty easily, but I'm not sure there are too many Premier League clubs that are going to buy Carl Jenkinson. So if it's a case that the transfer window closes on Thursday at 5 o'clock, can we sell him to the championship? Can we sell him to League One if that's what it is, you know?
Yes. So I think the Premier League clubs voted to end disruption on the Thursday. I think that's the case.
Right.
We're looking and looking here. We don't know. I'm looking for Championship transfer deadline, but everyone's so into the Premier League that there's nothing really... Oh, here you go. EFL clubs. Transfer window to close on Thursday, 9th of August. EFL clubs have voted through proposals to shut the summer transfer window for permanent transfers on Thursday, the 9th of August, which brings the 72 EFL clubs in line with the Premier League.
Right. So there's going
clubs
to be...
Clubs outside the top flight will still be able to sign players on loan until 31st of August.
Right. So we could see a lot of loan deals before the end of August. We could see a lot of stuff going on between now and Thursday at 5 p.m. It is a weird one, isn't it? It's totally... I don't think it's any kind of advantage for English clubs. Like, the idea of the transfer window closing before the start of the season, I think, is in theory a good one. It's something that I would support because I think it's good to have clarity before a season begins. But if there's no harmonisation of that across Europe, then all it does is it puts English clubs in a weird position. And I wonder, has it affected the amount of transfer business that's gone on this summer?
It does put you in a strange position. I mean, you know, does it put you in a difficult, vulnerable position, say, with Aaron Ramsey or somebody like that? You know, once the deadline theoretically goes, you can't replace him, but you're still vulnerable to the advances of a buying club. Like, I wonder if English clubs will be subject to very tempting bids for players they can't necessarily replace. But I think it is primarily a good thing. Look, I wanted it in the Premier League before, so I can't be too churlish about it now. It is just a shame that they haven't been able to bring Europe in line.
Yeah.
Be, I think, the best solution.
All right. Well, look, it is going to be a busy few days. You would hope it's going to be a busy few days because there are many candidates to leave before the deadline closes. And if we don't, what's the word I'm looking for here? In particular with Aaron Ramsey and Danny Welbeck, if nothing happens with them before the 9th of August, then they're going to be staying. And
yeah.
Their bargaining position, if it is indeed a bargaining position and not simply, you know, the running down of a contract, if that's what it is, then it becomes much, much stronger. We can't let them go. If we don't do anything ourselves before August the 9th, we can't let them go because there are players we're going to need.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, we've talked all summer about Aaron Ramsey and that situation's got to come to a head and how Arsenal manage those contracts. I do feel like I am surprised by the way that it has played out and surprised by the lack of decisiveness maybe on Arsenal's part. I felt like maybe there had to be a bit of a line in the sand that they couldn't let the club get into the same position they did with Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez. And yet here we are. I anticipated the people making those decisions at the club to be more bold, maybe, even if it meant potentially losing the player, just to show that the club won't be bullied in these contract negotiations. And yet that doesn't really have seemed to come to pass. So that's been a bit of a surprise to me.
All righty. Well, look, we'll see what happens between now and Thursday. And then, of course, between now and the end of August for clubs across Europe, because players like Lucas Perez and Joel Campbell seem to me reasonable candidates to go on loan to clubs in Europe, whether it's in Italy or Turkey or Spain or Portugal, wherever it might be. I think they might find a home, whereas English players, and I'm thinking of, David Ospina as well is one of those who could go, but Carl Jenkinson, I can't imagine Carl Jenkinson going to, you know, some club in Portugal. You know,
no, I think no. He's... But then, you know, Chuba Akpom went to Greece, so don't rule anything out. But yeah, I think the ones that we're looking at by Thursday are people like Jenkinson and apparently Callum Chambers.
Weird, weird, weird. Okay, we'll see what happens. For now, though, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more your questions and all that stuff in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two, where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arseblog, and also on the Arseblog Facebook page, facebook.com/thearseblog. Would you like to go first, or will I go first this week? What would you prefer? You
can have the choice. If you don't mind.
Okay.
Let's start with this. This is from Scott, who's at S Valerine. And Scott asks, would you let Perez join West Ham, as Sky reporting? He says, personally, I'd keep him and play him in the Europa League.
Yes, I think I would. I would let him go because I quite like him. I think he's an okay player. He looked quite good for us at times. He's experienced, but I think we've got too big of a squad. And in the absence of moving on Danny Welbeck, then I don't know how much he's going to play anyway, you know? And maybe moving Lucas Perez on gives us a chance to play Eddie Nketiah in the Europa League, and perhaps a greater benefit to us as a football club in the long run to playing somebody like Eddie Nketiah, who might develop into a player that we can use on a more regular basis. Or we find out that perhaps Eddie Nketiah isn't quite as good as everybody said, but we give him that chance for playing time. I mean, I think it gets, you know, some money in if we get a transfer fee from West Ham. It takes his wages off the books as well. I don't know that Lucas Perez will or could be the missing link between what we want to do this season and not, you know? He doesn't feel like an important player to me. He doesn't feel like an important part of the puzzle, if you like.
Yeah.
So I would be quite happy to let him go.
Do you think it's, I mean, you mentioned Eddie Nketiah as a potential beneficiary. Do you think this deal would be good news for Danny Welbeck?
Maybe.
Do you think Arsenal can sell both, I suppose, is what I'm asking?
No.
Right.
I think we got to keep one of those two.
Yeah,
you know,
I'd be inclined to agree with that.
To be honest,
my hunch was maybe that they might keep Perez of the two. I just felt that, you know, maybe he's a player that Emery knew from his time in Spain and would rate consequently, and Welbeck's contractual situation might make him the more sensible sale. But it seems, look, if they're willing to sanction this deal, they will have consulted the manager on it, and feels like the decision has been made. I mean, Perez was involved right at the start of pre-season, and his involvement has dipped dramatically since.
Yeah, he wasn't in the squad for Dublin at all.
No.
I don't think he was in the squad for the Lazio game. So Unai Emery's had a look and decided, okay, I've got stuff elsewhere. I mean, Welbeck, it doesn't feel to me like he can go anywhere at this point, because he's only coming back today from his holidays, and that gives us 3 days to sort out a sale. So I don't really see him go anywhere. And there hasn't been any talk, really, has there? I think a few weeks ago there was a story about Welbeck and Newcastle, but Newcastle don't appear to be making any transfers at all. So
sure.
That one's out the window. But it doesn't feel like Welbeck can go somewhere at this point without it being a last-minute thing. And again, going back into that sort of way we've planned or not planned our outgoing business.
Yeah, I mean, There has been a bit of talk, I think, about Everton as well. You know, I think that's where sort of players from big clubs can kind of go. It's like it's the new West Ham, if anything, the sort of retirement home. There was an interesting point in pre-season where Emery was asked about strikers, and he said, "Oh, we have enough strikers. We have Lacazette, we have Aubameyang, we have Nketiah," and the absence of both Perez and Welbeck from that list was kind of interesting, but I agree with you that we probably need to keep one. And I've got no issue with keeping Danny Welbeck. I'm just quite surprised, given that it might mean losing him for nothing in a year's time.
Yeah, Yeah, true. That's part of how maybe we can improve our transfer business, because whatever you might get for Danny Welbeck, like you just said to me in the break there between these two parts, Liverpool reportedly about to sell Danny Ings for £24 million. I mean, I don't know how the fuck they managed to do that. If they do manage to do that, fair fucking play. That's amazing business, but it just shows perhaps the way that we're doing things can really be improved, because if you can get $24 million for Danny Ings, you can get a decent chunk of money for Danny Welbeck, who has got a bit of a track record of scoring goals and is a player who would suit quite a number of clubs in the Premier League. So, yeah, we're leaving that money on the table. You know, I think Welbeck could be useful throughout the season, don't get me wrong, but is it the right way of doing things when perhaps you could sell and spend and improve? It's another strange one.
The other thing about Lucas Perez is just that while he is, you know, in theory a centre forward, he does offer you a bit of width if you play him on the left hand side. I remember him having some good games out there, you know, where he was kind of whipping crosses in from that flank. And just as we said in part one, it's not an area where we're blessed with much. But look, Emery's looked at him, and as I said, he must know the player. If he doesn't want him, he doesn't want him. There's no point keeping a player he's not going to use.
Okay, here's a question from Anish Chandoke, who's at Anish Chandoke. He says, how much is Gazidis involved in player contracts? Is it possible that the Ramsey saga has dragged on because Gazidis himself is trying to sneak out? How can he convince him to stay? Or rather, why would the club want a non-committed employee to discuss the future of a key player? I mean, is it possible that all this stuff at board level, the Gazidis to Milan stuff, is having an impact on the work we're trying to do or should be doing?
I hope not. I mean, you have to think that people like Raul, Sven, Huss Fahmy, who is actually, you know, the chief contract negotiator with the club, their future is not hopefully contingent on Gazidis's, and they would have an interest in tying Ramsey down to a new deal. So I would like to think that's not the reason. I think there are enough other people employed, enough diffusion of responsibility for us to be able to agree that contract if the player wanted to sign it. I think the key issue is the player doesn't seem to want to sign it.
Yeah, I think that is the key issue with the Ramsey thing. But just on that, the people like Huss Fahmy and Raul and Sven, etc., do they not have to be given specific boundaries within which they can work? There needs to be a voice of authority to tell them what their roles are and what their responsibilities are, right?
Of course, yeah. I just guess that, I mean, Not that I took everything from Chips Keswick's statement at absolute face value, but you have to hope, don't you? Whatever you may think of him, you have to hope that Gazidis is responsible enough to at least do his job until such time as he leaves.
If he's leaving, I mean, I was told last week that it was that he was going to leave. But even the fact that we're still in the dark over the future of the chief executive, I don't know. I mean, we've all embraced change this summer, and we've all welcomed it in many ways, you know, across coaching levels and youth level under 23s, Per Mertesacker, Freddie Ljungberg, all coming back in, Unai Emery, you know, the way we've done business, all those changes have been welcomed by everybody. But it does feel still a little like this is a club which overall could do with some... clarity is not the word, but it doesn't feel necessarily like everybody is singing from the same hymn sheet in a way. I don't know whether that's just me being slightly pessimistic about things, whether it's a gut feeling, but it doesn't feel like the well-oiled machine that we wanted this executive committee to be is quite that.
I mean, is that because whoever you appoint in the executive committee, there are still kind of fundamental issues underpinning that to do with the ownership of the club?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's another thing, because the story the other week about Usmanov being willing to sell to Kroenke, that's another sort of Damocles hovering over us in a way, isn't it? That if Usmanov decides to sell to Kroenke, well, that takes the club in an entirely different direction. So...
yeah, I mean, We had a question actually, which is about kind of the interrelationship between the board and the ownership. And it was from Robbo, who's at Clarkey. Robbo, who said, re-Ivan Gazidis, could it be that promises made to him haven't been fulfilled, such as money, both for buying players and contracts like Ramsey, and authority to run the club as he sees fit? Do you think there could be a breakdown maybe in the communication between the ownership of the club and the people effectively running it?
Maybe. I mean, you look at the board and you look at the people on it and the people who ultimately have the responsibility or the authority to make decisions, and it's hard not to be a little bit worried. Maybe there is a breakdown with Gazidis. I'm not sure Gazidis is that much of a man of principle that he would walk away simply because promises that were made to him weren't fulfilled. This was a guy who's quite happy to sit there and pick up his money season after season and his bonuses, you know, as he presided as chief executive over a period of decline for the club. So, you know, we heard that he was opposed to giving Arsene Wenger a new deal. If he was that principled, you know, maybe he would have walked away this time last year and said, okay, well, look, you can do what you want. I can't stand behind this anymore. But, you know, the other side of that, he was prepared to wait it out and make the changes, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think really Gazidis is driven by that kind of principle. I think if he's going, it's probably a financial incentive. And again, you know, I've got no issue with that. Anybody in any line of work, if you get an opportunity that can substantially increase your wages or could give you the opportunity to make the kind of money that you could retire on, you know, who among us wouldn't go for that? You know, but yeah. I don't think it's a question of principle.
No, I don't either. I don't either. I mean, the problem is that we don't know the full picture. It could all be part of, if there is a breakdown in communication, it could be all part of a negotiating tactic. It could be that Gazidis has already made up his mind to go. I just have to hope that, you know, given that he might be handing in his notice at the end of this week, you have to hope that they do what the necessary between now and then and maintain the level of professionalism to get what needs to be done done.
Okay, is it your question or my question?
I think it's your question now.
Okay, one second here. I did have one. Boom, boom, boom. I definitely had one here. One second.
I've got one if you want.
No, I've got it here. This comes from Queen Gunnar, who's at So Far. And she says, I'm really worried about our defence and the fact that our opening game is against Manchester City. On a scale of normal poo to erupting diarrhea, how worried are you? And what would be your defence?
My defence? I would be very worried. And my defence is to sit near a toilet the whole time. No, I am worried. I mean, I'd kind of allowed this idea to creep into my mind that City were going to be positively feeble, what with all their players being at the World Cup, and that I was going to, you know, see a lineup of kids, you know, and unknowns. And having watched them dispatch Chelsea pretty comfortably in the Community Shield, it doesn't really feel like that's going to be the case. So I'm more excited than worried, and that's a nice change. You know, I'm more intrigued than anything else. I can't wait to see how Arsenal acquit themselves, but I wouldn't say I was confident. You can't be confident against a team of that quality. The fear is less because it's tempered by excitement about the novelty. You know what I mean?
Right. But you're still quite concerned defensively.
Oh, I mean, they'll tear us apart. Yeah.
Who, assuming we are going to play a 4-4-2. Okay, here it is. This is the question. I have one here as well from somebody else. God damn it. Why can't I find what I'm looking for today? I'm really bad at this. Okay, Commander of the Gunners, who's at Nesius004. It ties into this question. He says, I'm asking this for the fourth week in a row. Nothing passive-aggressive there. So please answer. Starting 11, what do you guys think it will be? So given that we're going to have to choose our defense in this previous question, let's bang it out to the full 11. Who do you think is going to be?
We're on record, aren't we, for the goalkeepers? I think Cech, and you think it'll be Leno. So that's the keepers.
Yeah. Okay.
Back four, I think, is fairly straightforward. I think it will be Bellerin, Socrates, Mustafi, and Maitland-Niles.
I mean, that's a, you know...
Doesn't sound great, does it?
It's the opening game of the season against Manchester City, who won the league with 100 points and lost, I don't know, scored a bazillion goals. And your back four is Bellerin, Socrates, Mustafi, and Ainsley Maitland-Niles. That's unconvincing to me.
Yeah, that's fair. It's fair for that to be unconvincing, particularly in that left-hand channel, you know, I mean, actually both channels. It's all a worry. And the fact that we can't tell you who the goalkeeper is behind it doesn't make it much more convincing. But are we agreed that it will be that back four?
I think that will be the back four that he picks, bar any midweek injuries or issues. I think it will be Socrates and Mustafi, which I can't lie to you, James, doesn't make my stomach feel very good.
No.
It worries me. It worries me a great deal.
It worries me too. But, I mean, look, it's not going to be Callum Chambers, is it? So we shall see. What about midfield? What's the situation with Aaron Ramsey? It seems very vague, this injury. Worryingly vague.
Calf strain. Calf strain is what they said. They did do an update on the official website, didn't they?
Yeah.
Which was quite amusing.
Is there a prognosis of like...
No prognosis. Developed tightness in his right calf. Continues to be assessed, aiming to train next week. So it doesn't sound like it's necessarily long term, but Ramsey and calf strains and hamstring strains, particularly at the beginning of a season, are a worry. So I'm going to sort of go into this on the perhaps optimistic assumption that Aaron Ramsey is fit.
Okay.
And I think the midfield that we will pick for City is Torreira, Xhaka and Ramsey.
You think he'll pick them both?
Yeah.
The guys who are back late?
Mm.
What are his options? He's got Guendouzi. He's had a very good preseason.
Well, we had a question on that. This here it is. Me and my terrible questions. God damn it. I should open these up in a much more easy way to find.
Do you somebody... get your questions, print them out?
No, I just open them.
Dig a hole in your floor. Bury them all in separate places.
It's not that. I open them up in Firefox in a whole load of tabs.
Too many tabs.
Too many tabs. Anyway, I had a question. I apologize. Maybe I can just find it in my mentions here very quickly because I don't want to not give somebody a mention. Boom, boom, boom. Anyway, the point is, the question who it was like, given how well he's played in preseason, could you start Guendouzi against Manchester City?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Whoever it was, I apologize. I can't find it. I'm sorry.
You could, and I know some people have been very impressed by him, but it would be look, if you see Xhaka and Torreira fit to start, I would rather see them play.
Would you start him? Would you?
Probably not.
No.
I think it's huge risk. And actually, when I look at where he's vulnerable, it seems to me that when he's receiving the ball on the edge of his own box, he can dally on it. He can try and turn on the ball when it's not necessarily the most sensible move. And I feel like City really have the players to hurt you and capitalize on that. So
yeah.
I would be cautious.
So who do you think his midfield is going to be?
Let's say Ramsey's fit. I'm actually going to agree with you. I'm going to say that he's going to go for it and play Ramsey, Xhaka and Torreira. I think that is the best three that we have. That is my idea of what the first choice three will be going forward.
Mm.
And City are the best team we'll play all season. So why not? They've got to get fit by playing eventually.
Yeah.
So when are they going to do it? Let's do it now.
Right. So who's your front three?
Now that is a bit trickier. I know two components of it. I know one is Mesut Ozil. And I know the other is Aubameyang.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of a toss-up, really, because you've got Lacazette, you've got Mkhitaryan, and I guess you've got Alex Iwobi as well.
Yeah.
Just judging on the fact that he came on and had a decent sort of cameo against Lazio, with a really good little run through the centre. I wonder if it might just be Mkhitaryan.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking it'll be Mkhitaryan with, like I said, on the bench.
Yeah.
Aubameyang up front. At the same time, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if he played Lacazette up front and played Aubameyang on the left.
No, I think that's a really close call. But I just wonder, against Manchester City, if he might feel it's a bit gung-ho to play with two strikers. I wonder if he might go for Mkhitaryan just for a bit more balance. So, yeah, that's my 11. So we are actually agreed on it, with the exception of the goalkeeper. But it's not, it is that back four, isn't it, that you look at and think, well, that midfield three with Xhaka and Torreira in it, it better be pretty bloody effective.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got work to do to protect a back four which feels not necessarily makeshift, but.
Well, it sounds makeshift, but then three parts of that back four
are in the right position. Yeah, but three parts, you know, they're in the right positions. You got two central defenders. You know, Hector Bellerin's a right back. Maitland-Niles has done an okay job, but it just doesn't sound like, you know, if you're going to play a big team and all of a sudden you've got Dixon, Bold, Adams, Winterburn, that sounds like a good defense. I'm not saying that that's, you know, what we should be looking for at this moment in time. You know, that's clearly a unique set of defenders, but you could have some faith in them. And maybe it's just a question of giving them time together, but I think we've seen enough of Mustafi to have concerns about the way that he plays. It feels, this Chambers thing is just playing on my mind as well, because if we're accepting that we need another player at the center of our defense, which is the only reason I can think of for this move to go through, is that we have decided that we need a different player and Chambers is the one being asked to make way so we can bring in another player. But to bring that guy in 2 days or 3 days before the start of the season, that's a bit worrying.
It is worrying. It is worrying. And also, let's say that we go into the season with the four that we've got, so Mustafi, Socrates, Holding, Mavropanos.
Mm.
If one of those senior guys goes down, you are putting in a player who is relatively inexperienced, whichever one it is.
Yeah.
Chambers, at least, has got a full season at Middlesbrough under his belt. He's played plenty of football now, Callum Chambers.
Yeah.
I just think we're making ourselves vulnerable. I can only think somebody's coming in. I can only think that. Yeah. It's the only way I can make sense of it.
Weird one. Weird one. So, yeah, well, there's our starting 11.
Are you excited? You don't sound excited.
I'm excited for the start. I'm just worried. That's all. You know, you can't read too much into preseason either way. Good and bad. You know, I think you have to take it on its own merits. But yeah. I think we all accept that when Unai Emery or whoever was going to come in had a big job of work to do to get the team to function better as a team. And I don't think he's had a huge amount of time in order to do that work. You know, I think this is the beginning of the work that he has to do. So I'm a bit worried given the opposition. If we were playing a lesser light of the Premier League, you know, where you could get off to a relatively, I won't say easy, but a less difficult start, then I'd probably be more excited about the first game of the season rather than feeling as trepidatious as I am to face Manchester City. I think everybody's going to be up for it, and I think there'll be a great atmosphere, and hopefully it's a lovely day, and hopefully we play well, and just the fact that it's competitive football again will raise the level a bit, but I'm just a little bit worried. But, you know, maybe all these parts that he hasn't had in preseason, some of the players he hasn't had in preseason, you know, will come in and make a difference, and maybe what he's learned in preseason, you know, will inform his team selection for this weekend. And he might find the balance in this first Premier League team that he hasn't necessarily found in the preseason games.
Yeah. I mean, is it a worry? Someone asked a question about this and you'll have to forgive me. It's now my turn to not have that question in front of me. Is it a worry that we feel a bit like we haven't seen the team play a game in preseason?
Maybe, but then I think he had to look at all his players, didn't he? He had to give them game time. He had to get them match fit and he had to make assessments on them, not just from training, but by what they do on the pitch, because you assume every player that's sent out on that pitch is sent out there with some instruction from Unai Emery in terms of how he wants them to play in that position, whether we're in a back three or a back four, or it's 4-3-3 or 4-4-2, whatever it is. You know, this is a coach who is renowned for his attention to detail. So he's looking at these players, he's telling them what he wants from them in that position and in various scenarios and circumstances, and he's able to make a judgment on whether or not they can carry out those instructions. But of course, it's very difficult when you're giving a guy half an hour here, 45 minutes there. And, you know, we only had four preseason games. No, we had these behind closed doors games as well, which might have been useful to him. But I don't think it's a real worry that we haven't seen the team yet, because I don't know necessarily that the team exists yet or should exist. We shouldn't just have a first 11, you know, but as we keep saying, it's going to take time to wait and see. So
we are waiting and seeing, but not much longer. Not much longer.
Here's a question for you. I mean, we've given our answer here, but Basleel Tuurdos, who's at the Basleel, I think Tuodros, sorry about that. He says, Lichtsteiner or Bellerin against Sané? Lichtsteiner's game is well suited for players like that.
I mean, no, I maybe, is he? I don't know. I wouldn't want to be 34 and up against Leroy Sané.
No, me neither.
So I'm going to say no, Bellerin, please. I know he gave Bellerin trouble last season, but I still think he's the best man for that job. We agree on that, I guess.
Yeah.
By the way, just as a little update as we go along, James Ollie of the Evening Standard is reporting that Arsenal have sanctioned a £1 million loan deal for Chambers at Fulham, and that they are in for a new centre-back and are looking at Vida, but must raise funds first. I can't imagine that £1 million is going to be the difference.
No. So if we've got to raise funds, who do we sell? Who's getting sold? Because you've got to, if you're going to bring in somebody like Vida, who does he play for?
Well, the talk in Turkey...
He used to be
at Shakhtar, and then I think he went to... let me have a look. Besiktas he plays for.
Yeah, Besiktas.
And there is some talk in Turkey, as I understand it, that Danny Welbeck might be used as a make weight in a deal.
Right. But this is another guy, 29.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was good in the World Cup, I'll be honest.
So did I. But
some good games.
It does feel a bit desperate, though, doesn't it? Or a bit like last ditch scrambling, which is what we weren't supposed to do this summer. I mean, you've got, if you're going to. What are you going to spend on this guy? 20 million? Another 20 million on a 29-year-old centre-half who'll have no resale value? Is that good business? Is that the right way to do your business? Is it simply a case that this is what we have to do in order to sort out the defence? But if we're going to raise funds, we're going to have to sell someone who costs, what, somewhere in the region, 15, 20 million, 25 million? Who do you sell? Who's sellable or movable that will raise you any real significant money at this point? And the only two players I can think of right now are Danny Welbeck.
Yeah.
I mean, Lucas Perez, we talked about earlier, get 5 million maybe for him. Joel Campbell, what are you going to get for, you know, I give Joel Campbell away.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to get a transfer fee for him. You're not going to get much for Carl Jenkinson. You're not going to get much for Cohen Bramall. You're not going to get a great deal for David Ospina. You know, we've been unable to move Ospina season after season. So what are you going to get for him, even though he's got 2 years left on his deal? You know, 4 or 5 million, maybe, if you move all those players on. The other one, of course, is Aaron Ramsey.
Yeah, that is the other one. I've got a question about that coming up, actually. But
right.
The Vida thing, or the centre-half thing, it does really feel... I mean, I said in the first half, it feels like Emery's been given a collection of centre-halves and isn't convinced by them, isn't it? And the other thing about Vida, I don't know how real that link is, but he is someone who has, I remember reading, covered as a fullback in both areas. So maybe, I mean, he's played mainly as a right back as well as centre half, but maybe he has played at left back. maybe that's in their thinking too, to an extent, given something to Kolasinac. But we shall see. My question to you was going to be, if I can now find it, it was about Aaron Ramsey. Oh, I've caught the bug.
You've got it. We're having a disaster here today on the question finding.
Right, here we go. It's from Dan Butler, who's at DanButler211. And Dan says, if the deal was possible, would you take exchanging Ramsey and cash for Ousmane Dembele from Barcelona?
Like, that doesn't solve our problem in the centre of midfield.
No.
You know, losing a really good central midfielder and bringing in a very good attacking player, it sounds attractive, but I just wonder or worry that we don't have enough in central midfield. I think if you're going to sell Ramsey, you need to bring in another central midfield player.
What would that leave you with? It would leave you with sort of Xhaka, Torreira, you know, maybe Ozil or Mkhitaryan, if you were going to play that kind of system.
Maitland-Niles,
Elneny.
Guendouzi.
Oh, problem solved, Guendouzi. No, you would be light, but you might change the emphasis of the team or the squad. Mm. You might balance the squad slightly by having a wide player there.
I can't imagine that Barcelona are going to allow a player they spent, what did they spend on him, 100 and something million?
Something mental like that.
Right, yeah. So what sort of inroad into that fee would Aaron Ramsey make with less than 12 months left on his contract?
You could dress it up.
25, you could dress it up to whatever you want, but realistically, you know, could Arsenal make up the gap in cash to bring in Dembele? I don't think so. If we're scrambling around to fucking find cash for a 29-year-old centre-half, how the fuck are we going to get enough cash, even if we throw in Aaron Ramsey, to bring in Dembele?
Fair point, yeah. I think Dembele would be a good signing for Arsenal, obviously, because he's a £100 million winger. But it also that question is all contingent on if Ramsey will sign. Yeah. You know, if you're telling me now Ramsey's not going to sign, do you want to do a deal where you get a good player in part exchange or whatever? I'd say sure.
Sure.
But if we can make Ramsey sign a contract, I would like Ramsey to be part of the squad going forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just feels like, it feels like he's made a decision to not sign this summer.
Yeah.
And to see where he is in January, when legally he can have a chat with Barcelona, see what's on the table.
Absolutely. Barcelona or any other club across Europe who might feel inclined to sign a good player for free rather than pay a transfer fee for him this time around.
Milan, that's when Gazidis' plan all comes to a head.
Yeah. Okay, here's a question from Harpelius, who's at Manalycream. I don't know how you pronounce it, but he says, is it realistic to think third to sixth place is up for grabs and Arsenal have a chance of claiming a spot just by being a tiny weeny bit less shit than last year? So we're moving back towards a positive thing here. You know, is it unrealistic to think that just by improving perhaps our away record, we could be more competitive when it comes to at least getting back into the top four?
Well, definitely, if we improve our away record, we'll be better off. I think, City are going to win the league, I think. You know, I mean, I know it doesn't sound like a particularly bold claim, but I think they're the best team. And I think Liverpool are getting closer. They're getting closer. But the rest of the sides are potentially vulnerable. You know, United, we're all hoping for the Mourinho implosion. Spurs haven't significantly improved during the summer. I know they've kept people, but they haven't brought many in. And there's talk that they'll lose Alderweireld as well, potentially. And then Chelsea, look, they're implementing a whole new style upon the team. I know we're attempting to do the same, but if we can make improvements, I think it's there to be had. I think that it's all about top four. You know, there's not enough times I can reiterate that. I don't think Arsenal can win the league this season. Listen to the conversations we're having about the defence.
Yeah.
But I think we can get ourselves into the Champions League and be in a position then to maybe assemble a side that is a more realistic contender.
Okay. Let me just throw this at you then. So we get back into the top four. and we get that injection of Champions League money, and we can bring in better players because better players want to play at Europe's top table. They want to be in the Champions League. So that opens up avenues for you to do that.
Yeah.
But you've spent £20 million on a 30-year-old centre-half or 29-year-old centre-half. Socrates will be 30. Vida, let's say he comes in, he'll be 30. Mustafi will be whatever he is. Do you not have the same difficulty in trying to move those players on that we're facing currently with some of the other players we've got?
Yes, you probably do.
Because they've got long contracts, decent wages.
And they're not a great age to sell.
Exactly.
Yes. Mm. I can't contend that that is potentially an issue. But Arsenal have adopted a more short-term strategy, haven't they?
Yeah.
I mean, IBK, who's at IB Kenny on Twitter, says, was our transfer strategy this summer a mistake? We bought really early and now we have to sell cheap as clubs know we're desperate to sell.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're necessarily desperate to sell. Just, well, we've made ourselves desperate to sell now because we've decided that we need to do something with the centre of our defence. And look, if Unai Emery, after the games that he's played and looking at the players, decides, uh-oh, we really need to do something about the centre of our defence, then I think we should do it rather than just not. You know, if he's identified a problem, then try and fix it as best you can. I don't think that's the issue. It's just that it's come so late. But I just don't think the players that we are willing to sell are that desirable to other clubs.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't, you know, who's going to bang your door down for Joel Campbell or Carl Jenkinson or David Ospina or Lucas Perez? You know, decent players who can do a job, but, you know, I think the disparity between Premier League wages and European wages is a significant factor here because it does make it difficult for players to leave because, you know, you're not going to go and take a 50% pay cut just because you want to play football, especially not at, like, whatever age Lucas Perez is, 30 or whatever. You know, why would you? You've only got a few years left. So it's about whether or not Arsenal can make it attractive enough for someone like Lucas Perez to leave as well, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, it's got to be in his interest. Yeah. Know? Ultimately, we gave him that contract. I do think it's interesting that there's the squad that we've assembled, even the manager to an extent, feels like one put together to get us back into the Champions League. And it'll be interesting once we arrive there, how able to cope with that level of competition we are. But that is a problem for another day. And in many respects, I hope it's a problem that we have because we haven't done it yet.
All right. Well, look, I think this week is going to be informative on many levels as to where we are and where we're going into the new season. So we'll take one final question. This comes from Fred, who's at RLF86. He says, this season could be a rocky one. So what's the best breed of dog for hugging?
Good question. Good question. I'm looking after a Rottweiler at the moment. Mm. And she will hug you. So if you lie on the floor,
yeah,
which frankly I'm doing a lot of the time at the moment, it's too hot to do much else, she will kind of come over and give you a very much a bear-like cuddle. It's quite extraordinary, actually.
Oh.
So I find myself doing that quite often, really, just whenever I'm feeling down. So I might say Doreen the Rottweiler.
Doreen the Rottweiler, yeah.
Doreen, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously very predisposed towards German shepherds who...
Are they good at hugs and
cuddling? Yeah, they do like it. They do like it. But I think it's got to be a big dog, doesn't it?
You know,
it can't be a Chihuahua or a Bichon Frise, you know, not to denigrate those breeds for people who have them. Everyone loves their own dogs. But, you know, they're not the greatest for hugging. You need something to get your arms around. I tell you who looks like the cuddliest dogs to me. The you know, there's two breeds that really spring to mind as being really cuddly and they will be great for hugs. One is the Bernese Mountain Dog, just because they're so big and fluffy and what have you.
I'm Googling it because I couldn't tell you what it looked like.
Have a look at this.
Wow. I saw one just like this, actually. Maybe it was a Bernese Mountain Dog the other day.
Yeah.
I'd love to sleep with a Bernese Mountain Dog. What I meant was, you know, just I'd love to have a nice cuddle with one.
Yes. And then the other one is a Leonberger. look up a Leon Burger and tell me you wouldn't go cuddling with one of those.
Oh, wow. They've got such a thick coat, haven't they?
Yeah. A really nice kind of...
sort of wintry feel.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like if you were somehow trapped in the cold, you could stay warm by just climbing under the Leon Burger.
And they look huge, keep you warm. As well. They're quite big.
Yeah, they're big dogs. Big dogs. So...
nice dogs. I mean, yeah, either one of those would be pretty good.
All right.
Maybe we should get, you know... I mean, you've got your dogs. I might have to get a dog to get me through this season. I'm going to be clutching it like Arsene Wenger clutching Pat Rice on the bench at West Brom.
Everybody, after you're finished listening to this podcast today, get yourself out and get a Bernese Mountain Dog or a Leon Burger. You're going to need it this season. Or both, indeed.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, we can... You can still hug dogs even when things are going well in the season. So if everything is hunky-dory and we're winning games and we don't need hugs for comfort to make us feel better, we can just have hugs for hug's sake with dogs, because why not?
What a lovely message. Mm-hmm. And also, can I say, I know that we've sort of been a bit concerned about the defence, but I am excited for this season. We've waited such a long time for this, for, you know, a new manager, maybe a bit of a difference in the style of play, just the novelty of it. It promises to be... a fascinating campaign for different reasons to what we're normally accustomed to. So, I am really looking forward to the opening weekend.
Yeah, look, I think Unai Emery appears to be a very smart guy, and everybody who's spoken about him and spoken about him as a coach talks about him in glowing terms. So if I don't sound terribly excited about the opening game of the season, it's only because he's had such a short amount of time to work with these players and the opposition that we're facing is so strong. I do have a lot of confidence in him that during the season he'll be able to work things out. You know, he will hopefully get this team more organized, better defensively. You know, he will drill things into them that need to be drilled in. You know, he's going to make them watch videos as much as they might not want to do it. He's going to make them do those things. And hopefully over the course of, you know, the first 3 to 6 months of the season, it might be a bit up and down. But if he can find his way, then, you know, this is what it's about. It is about having a bit of patience. And it is about being open to losing a few games and not playing that well here and there until such time as he can really properly imprint on these players what he wants from them. So I am excited. I am concerned, but I am really excited as to how this season is going to progress. So if it has been a bit gloomy, sorry about that. It's not necessarily meant to be doom and gloom. It is just, I guess, realistic, or my honest opinion and James' honest opinion of where we are and what we're doing. But it isn't to say that we're down on the way things are happening at the club right now.
No, there's a lot to be positive about, but there are, you know, as always, caveats to that. But if we beat Man City, I'll be saying we're going to win the league. So, you know,
of course, that's what it's all about. It's about getting carried away over the smallest little things and going crazy over the smallest little negative things. Isn't that how it works?
That's right. I think that's pretty much the plan.
That's how it's worked. Okay, well, look, thank you as ever for listening. We will have a Premier League season opening preview Arsecast on Friday for you. And, of course, we've got Transfer Deadline Day on Thursday. So keep an eye out on the website, on Arseblog News. We'll carry all the stories about potential deals in and out on the site throughout the week. Until the next Arsecast Extra, which will be next Monday, and we will be poring over the Manchester City game, however it's gone. Take it easy. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.